Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Minority Friday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Democrats about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
At top of the morning, it's 8:39. Our guest on Minority Friday, Ilana Rubel, a representative, assistant minority leader from District 18. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
District 18, you're a Boisean, huh?
I am indeed. Southeast Boise.
What's keeping you up at night in the legislature right now?
Well, I wasn't too happy about the action taken yesterday by the House Education Committee to strike a bunch of the standards from the Idaho science standards for our public schools. They struck any reference to climate change. They struck references to biodiversity, any impact humans have on animal habitat. They struck some pretty basic scientific facts from what our kids are going to learn. So that's certainly one thing.
And did they strike these scientific facts purely for political reasons?
I think they did. Yeah. And I think it's not doing our kids a service to send them out in the world not learning established scientific facts. I think our kids aren't going to be able to compete with kids in other states who are learning about reality.
What else in terms of education, funding education, improving education in Idaho, is the legislature working on, or what would you like to see them working on?
Well, I have another concern right now, which is House Bill 67, mm-hmm. which is the tax cut bill brought by Mike Moyle that passed the House and has been sent over to the Senate. We're waiting to see what the Senate will do with it. This is one. It's kind of a classic tax cut for the rich that's really going to jeopardize funding for a lot of things, schools, roads, you name it. It basically, when you look at where the dollars go, practically nothing goes to people in the middle class. Nothing goes to working families. If you're in the if you're in the lower 20%, you get $4 a year. Mm-hmm. If you're in the lower 40th percentile, you get $17 a year, and your average middle class family will get $32 a year. Now, if you're on the top end, if you're making over $400,000 a year, that's when you get the real bucks out of this tax cut. That's when you get thousands of dollars in tax cuts. But the impact is we think it's going to take about $58 million out of the budget. Which is going to punch a hole in any efforts we might want to take on education or fixing our roads or a lot of other really important criteria.
I've heard that we have a surplus right now, but is this just a way to eliminate any surplus in the future?
Yeah, I think the surplus looks a little bit illusory, if you will. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of really unknown factors. So I think we're really jumping the gun by even thinking we have a real surplus right now. If the Affordable Care Act is repealed, for example, mm-hmm. that is going to punch a hole in our budget you could drive a truck through. I mean, that's going to be many tens of millions of dollars. We know for a fact we're going to have to come up with an extra $22 million just for the catastrophic fund. But it's going to really put us in a budget crunch. We're going to lose $220 million a year on subsidies for our health exchange if that repeal goes through. Mm-hmm. So there is so much uncertainty right now, you know, just on the healthcare front, much less, you know, our growth has been overshooting projections. We overshot the career ladder by $8 million this year just by more kids being in school. So I don't think there's even a surplus there to the tune of what they think there is to be giving away. But once that's gone, I don't know how many people realize we had that surplus eliminator to fix our roads last year. No surplus, no surplus eliminator, no fixed roads.
Exactly. And then we just end up waiting for the next year to show up.
Exactly. Exactly. And we're not going to have that was, I think, $95 million that got us fixed roads last year. And that's not going to be there.
State of education in the state of Idaho right now, despite things that, you know, yesterday, like climate change, et cetera. How do you view it? What needs to be done?
Great question. We've done some really good things over the last few years, and I'm really proud of the steps we've been taking, but they're just not enough. You know, we were so far behind. Our teachers had starting salaries of $31,000, which was just a joke. And now we're creeping upwards. We're getting more toward $35,000, which is great. Great move, but still woefully inadequate. All the states around us, you know, Wyoming's paying $43,000, Oregon's paying at $38,000, $39,000. We're nowhere competitive to the states around us. So border towns in Idaho just can't keep their teachers for anything. So K-12, we have a lot of problems. We still have a lot of school districts on four-day weeks. Higher education, we didn't do anything on. For the last few years, we just said, okay, you know, you get to the back of the line. We'll deal with you later. Mm-hmm. We're going to worry about K-12 for now. And now, finally, this year, the governor is convening a task force to deal with higher education and deal with all those tuition hikes and our poor go-on rate and all of that. First meeting is today. And I'm really worried that we're going to strip away every bit of money that would be in the budget to deal with that before we've even had our first meeting.
San Francisco, of course, in the last few days announced that they're going to offer for San Francisco residents free community college. Now, we have some community colleges in Idaho. What would we have to do to be able to afford to do that? Or have the will be there?
Yeah, that's a long shot. I don't know if that'll ever happen. But I think, you know, we can look at things short of that to at least make it affordable for those who need it. And that's one of the things we really need to examine. And I'm one of the members of the Task Force on Education. But we have a terrible go-on rate right now. We have a terrible rate of people getting post-secondary diplomas. And it doesn't have to be a four-year diploma, you know, mm-hmm. a certificate.
Associate's something like that.
Exactly, associate's degree. There are a lot of, you know, things in the trades that really would be helpful. But the experts say we need to have 60% of our population with those diplomas. And right now we're at 35%. They say 60% by the year 2020. That's 3 years from now mm-hmm. for us to be economically competitive. And we're nowhere close.
Okay, we are talking with Representative Ilana Rubel this morning, from Assistant Minority Leader from District 18.
You're listening to Minority Friday on 670 KBOI.
Suddenly the day's brighter.
That's because Ilana Rubel is here from the Idaho State Legislature. From the House, she's the House Assistant Minority Leader. It's Minority Friday. Let's talk about a little bit about criminal justice reform.
Yeah.
What does the Idaho criminal justice system need most right now?
Well, I'm very excited on this topic. I've got a couple bills coming on Monday. And the wonderful thing about this is it's really a great area for bipartisan cooperation. So the two bills that I'm bringing on Monday, I'm bringing with one of the most conservative members of the House, Steve Harris, civil asset forfeiture reform. This was an area, and we're working with the Freedom Foundation and the ACLU on this one.
Well, goodness sakes.
Exactly. It's just where the two ends of the spectrum just meet around, come straight around the earth and meet on the other side.
I knew it was a circle somehow.
Exactly. This is an interesting area that's really been getting a lot of national attention. I was pretty shocked when I looked at the statute and what it allows right now. Basically, it allows law enforcement to take any property that is anywhere near drugs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to have been connected to the drugs, doesn't need to be proceeds.
Or purchased with drug money. Yeah.
Doesn't need to be purchased. The standard is proximity. And they can take anything. They can take your money. They can take your computer, your clothes, your anything at all. Not needless to say, the whole car.
And what is the proximity? Do I have to make sure my next door neighbors aren't selling drugs?
Well, I mean, there's some concern. They can take a container, which could mean your house. In addition to your car, you don't need to be convicted of a crime. You don't even need to be charged with a crime, and law enforcement can just keep it.
Doesn't seem fair, does it?
No. So it really offends our notions of due process. So we're looking to reform that. Another one that I'm bringing, and this sort of flowed out of the first one because I was meeting with people about civil asset forfeiture, and a lot of folks said, "Oh, great! I'm really glad you're working on that." But let me tell you what really needs to happen. We really need to work on mandatory sentencing minimums for drug offenses.
I'm guessing that wasn't Steve Harris.
No, I'm working on that one with Christy Perry, though, another Republican.
Oh, all right.
And this is one, you know, again, where there are, I think it's really a relic of the war on drugs era. And I'm not a fan of drugs at all. But looking at the criminal justice code, it really does not make any sense right now. There are only three offenses that I could find in the code that carry any real sentencing minimums. Mm-hmm. It's child molestation, killing someone while drunk driving, and drug offenses. Everything else, judges have discretion. They can look at, you know, well, was it a violent offense? Was it, you know?
So triple homicide, it's up to the judge.
It's up to the judge. Ah. It's up to the judge on pretty much everything. Rape, murder, bank robbery, embezzlement, you name it. It's up to the judge to look at the particulars of a case and decide. But boy, you get a drug offense, zero discretion. You are going away for 5 years no matter what. And that can really ruin lives.
So whether you're toking marijuana on a street corner or selling cocaine to little kids.
or bringing stuff from Canada to give to people who can't afford what they're being prescribed.
Right. And I heard there was a dad on my kid's soccer team who's a public defender who was telling me once while we were watching the game about this case he had of a guy who ran a perfectly legal dispensary in Washington State and was driving into Idaho to go to a friend's wedding or something and had just forgotten to take his inventory out of the back of his car. He was just driving in for the day, planning to drive right back out. No plans to sell in Idaho. But he got pulled over and he got caught with that volume of drugs in the back of his car, and he is going to prison for years and years, and there is not one thing they can do about it because it's just mandatory. And so I think we should just give judges a little discretion back. Maybe they don't. Maybe they'll decide it still is the right thing to lock these people up, but at least they can make a case-by-case decision.
Meanwhile, clean out your cars, people.
Yes.
Okay.
Is there support for that bill, do you think?
Well, I really hope so. I'm going to have an introductory hearing on Monday, and we'll see where that goes. But I think it would really improve a lot of lives in the state of Idaho.
Let's talk about the con.
Oh, yes.
That should be fun.
One of my favorite issues.
Just tell us about it.
This is another one where the right and left are meeting, and I'm working with another very conservative legislator on it, Judy Boyle. We just published an article in the paper on that one. The con is the thing that should be keeping people up at night, but it's so wonky, so many people don't know about it. Little background, there's two ways you can change the Constitution.
Okay.
You can do the traditional amendment way where you propose an amendment and Congress votes on it and it goes around all the states for ratification and everybody sees the language and they know exactly what they're voting on. And that's the only way our Constitution has ever been amended.
Right.
But then there's this other kind of X factor that's never been tried, which is to have a constitutional convention where you can just rewrite anything. It's just basically starting over as if it were 1787 again. And this has never been done since 1787, and no one quite knows what it would look like or what would happen. But there's a big push for it to happen right now. There's a lot of folks in Idaho pushing for Idaho to sign on to this. We are dangerously close to it happening. When 34 states call for it, it has to happen. Congress has no discretion. They have to order one. We're at 28 states right now, and there's a big push this year to close the last six states to move us to a con. CONCON being short for Constitutional Convention. This scares the daylights out of me because it's just terrifying. Who knows what we would lose or what would come in or out of our Constitution? And I feel like it's served us pretty darn well for, 230 years. And we are really playing with fire and opening that up to a completely unknown rewrite process.
So apparently we don't think we're arguing enough at the moment.
One can scarcely imagine what that would look like when we're dealing with a constitutional rewrite.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's a funny one because the fences move around when you start talking about constitutional conventions.
Right.
Because there are a lot of people on the right who are constitutionalists really like that. And then there's a lot of people on the left who also don't think it should be messed with. That's interesting to see what would happen in that case.
Right.
And as you said, scary.
Very scary. And there are folks on both sides. You know, some folks on the left think it would be great because we could get rid of get the popular vote instead of the Electoral College and maybe get rid of Citizens United. There are folks on the right that think they could get in a constitutional, gay marriage ban or an abortion ban or who knows what else. But nobody knows what will come out of this. And I think we got to just stick with the Constitution we've got.
All right, thanks. Yolanda Rubel has been our guest.
If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, KBOI News Time 9:06. Boise Mayor Dave Beter joins us for his monthly visit. Good to see you, Mayor. How
good morning.
Are you doing?
Doing fine, thanks.
How's Boise doing? Are we staying afloat?
We are,
so
we
to speak.
Are so far.
We got a new grand opening coming up here.
We do. We have the Innit 500. For those of you around a while, where JB's Big Boy used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's today, right? That opening?
This afternoon at 3:00. I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't been over there yet, and
you'll like
it. Gosh, it's a great spot.
You'll like it.
It's just so great to see such a prominent corner with that kind of use. So.
And it's a nice hotel, right?
Very nice, upscale kind that public servants can't afford to stay in unless
exactly. I was going to say, take your credit
unless
card.
Unless there's graft going on, probably. So,
is there graft going on?
There is no graft going
okay,
on.
That's good.
The
I felt
restaurant,
to ask.
Richards, is he's first-rate chef, and I'm mm-hmm. anxious to see how
yeah, he's been in Boise for a long time, and that the restaurant's been open for a while, right? For a week
it
or
has,
so?
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't been over yet at all, so I'm anxious to see it. It's part of between 400 and 500 rooms coming online, mm-hmm. which is a big number, but I've seen a couple different studies that say with the expansion of the convention center,
yep.
business activity,
yep.
we need it. So it's great. It's, you know, and the room tax pays in to do some other things. That pays for the convention center and might have the opportunity to do some more things. So there's good news on a lot mm-hmm. of fronts there, in addition to what they put into the economy. And
plus, it's such a nice upscale addition. And to see downtown now actually growing south toward the river,
yeah.
which it was stagnant for so long, didn't go that direction.
Yeah, it's that's what we love to see. These
and growing west as well.
You know, where you already have all the city services, all the infrastructure to add to your downtown in those spots. It's just ideal. You know, that's one of the things we had hoped would go on and look to do, and it's rocking right now, so it's great.
There are, we've all heard in the past couple of months, there are places around the country that refer to themselves, usually big cities, usually with big cities with a large number of minorities, that consider themselves to be sanctuary cities for refugees, for illegal immigrants, people who are here. Now, you had a resolution some time back where you didn't turn this into a sanctuary city, right. but you said Boise is a welcoming city.
Right.
A couple of things. What's the difference between a welcoming city and a sanctuary city, and how many people agree with you?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll start with the end of your question. It was a council resolution that I was more than happy to support, and it was there was a really good crowd there that night. The response, you know, at least anecdotally, has been overwhelmingly positive. So, you know, I think that one of our, you know, we were careful, they were careful to frame it the way we wanted it. We've been in a welcoming city since our founding.
Right.
Regardless of, you know, where you came from. And we want to reaffirm that. So I think to get into the, you know, the sanctuary city or not is kind of a fool's errand, especially right now. We are, our police are active in our community, and we want it to get across. Part of community policing is a level of trust in your police. That's one of the things I'm happiest about in the time that we've been there is that relationship, both the culture of your police and the relationship between your community and your department are central to having a successful city government. So in that, but that includes, if you know, we don't consider immigration to be part of what we do. You know, it's not, we're busy, we're doing all kinds of things. If you're a victim of a crime or you've committed it, you know, we have evidence that you committed a crime, we're going to do the right thing with that. And that's where we are. So, you know, after that, I think it's not particularly productive to get into that whole thing,
right.
on whichever side you
now.
You
just,
are.
Let me ask you just one more question here.
Yeah.
After the resolution, did you have much feedback that was less than positive?
Oh, there's always some, but I think it's probably. I looked early on, you know, just calls coming in, and it was 3-4 to 1. So
okay,
that kind of. You know, that kind of difference.
So maybe 25% of the people think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think 25% of the people think, you know, everything's at least, you know, that kind of percentage thinks most everything is a bad idea, whether it's the same percentage or not. So,
and talking a little bit about the weather and the things that happened, Warm Springs has been closed for a while.
Yeah.
Outside of that, there really hasn't been much. I mean, we've had some serious snowfall, some serious stuff in the streets, some serious melting. It's been 50 degrees at night the last couple of nights. Weezer's flooding. Twin Falls is flooding. Every other place is flooding. Boise's not.
God, we've had a, knock on wood, a good run. Like a lot of people, I think, I've never been so happy to see dirt again, even though now my leaves are there and I've got to rake my leaves.
Rats.
Because I didn't get it before the snowfall fell. But no, we'll just have to see on the interesting, that pretty involved article in the paper about snow levels in different basins. And ours is not, I mean, it's over 100%. I think it was 115, 112%.
Yeah, something like that.
And even though it was 160% in December or something. So we got a ways to go. We always stay very tuned to that and, you know, get as prepared as we can. But, you know, so far so good overall.
Well, needless to say, the river's going to be high this spring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good in all these ways. And but we, you know, we're very tuned into that and watch it very closely, and we'll be ready to go. I think a lot depends on how it melts, what the weather's like in that stretch. So,
the Treasure Valley, or if you will, the Boise metro area, has been recently projected to hit 1 million people by about 2040 or so. So about 23 years from now, and that of course brings up the issue of public transit again. Is there anything new that we are working on? Are there any agreements?
Well, there's the trouble. Let me go that way first. There are only two states in the country, Idaho and Alabama, that don't have either state support for public transportation or a local option where you can go to your citizens and make the case. Unless you're talking college football, that's really not where you want to be, Idaho and Alabama, I don't think. So no offense to them. But so we think that ought to change. And there are other areas that could use, you know, that authority. I think it starts there. It may not be for public transportation, but I've seen some polling recently. This is the best news and news that we can are looking into what to go forward. But 67% of Idahoans say, I want that authority locally. Mm-hmm. I may vote against everything that comes, but it makes sense for us to have the ability to chart our future. And then you start asking questions about what you want to use it for. It goes down, understandably. But we think that's reason to go look at maybe even an initiative, which is a big lift. But that's what we're scoping now.
As far as, like, state money, though, I've never felt like anybody outside of the Boise area has the least bit of interest in this sort of thing.
It's a tough it's a big lift over there. So, but that's why they continue not to allow us to make our own case to our citizens, like almost every state or urban area, certainly. That's the thing. You know, Salt Lake's done incredible things, and they're really geographically and demographically a lot close, you know, a lot like us. So, but it may be time with those kind of good numbers we're looking at, is an initiative possible where we put it on the ballot and see what people say. So that's what we're scoping right now.
We're talking with Boise Mayor Dave Beter, KBOI News Time 916.
This is Idaho Talks Live, today at 3. Listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time is 921. Idaho Talks Live, our special guest in studio, Boise Mayor Dave Beter. We have some school bonds coming up.
We do. The election is in March. And they briefed us the other night, and I've had some other meetings with the school district. We think it's a really important issue. The council did a resolution in support of the bond as well. It's, I think, around $170 million. But there are several bonds dropping off this year, so the rate that you're paying is the same. It might be a couple bucks either way, but it basically, you know, hits in there where the other ones used to be. I think they've done a first-rate job of making sure that it takes care of all the schools in the whole district, because there's all kinds of different pieces of it. They have these cafegymatoriums, or whatever they call them, where they're doing all these different things in one room, and it's a real challenge. So it replaces those with distinct uses. There's a school, I can't think of the name of it, it won architectural awards. It's built underground, and it was a bad idea because the roof is Toast.
Yeah, it's funny.
I wish I could remember that name, but it won architectural awards when it was new, but it didn't pan out. And this year, it's even worse. So
all it takes is a significant snow event or anything like that.
That's it. You know, yeah. Whittier School over there by the Whitewater Park is just bursting at the seams, so they're going to have to look at redoing that. We're working with them to look at putting rec centers in a strategically too. So it's regardless of what you think, I'd encourage people to take a good look at it. Again, I think, and the council thinks it's a great way to go and important to the future of the district and our kids.
Is it Amity Elementary that you're referring
Amity's
to?
Amity's the one.
That's right by my house.
Yeah, it's...
How do you know?
It was cutting edge, but it didn't pan out too well. So.
Actually, the Highlands used to have one underground thing up there years years ago, too.
Yeah, it's still there, I think. But it's...
They don't use it anymore, do they?
No, there's some... I was thinking of that the other day. Yeah. The bomb shelter, we used to call it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some private firm in there now. Apparently it worked out or is working in that case, but
up in my neighborhood, I live up a little bit above you, and up in my neighborhood, there's those two underground houses. I'm sure you've seen them.
Yeah,
can't remember what street they're on.
Yeah,
but they've been on there for years, and I don't know.
Yeah, cutting edge idea.
Your patio's on your roof. But, I don't, you know, but
yeah,
they're still there. They've been going for a while.
Yeah, it didn't pan out in at least that case. So.
We talked about this earlier in the hour. The inn at 500 Capitol is opening, big hotel. What is the next anticipated large opening for something in Boise?
Boy, that's a good question. Those, I think it's a race to the other hotels.
Yeah,
you know, there's a big development going on west of the Simplot headquarters, but I think it includes office space and parking garage and a hotel there too. Mm-hmm. So, but I think the one across the street.
Be pretty close.
I just call it the Dunk Lease because that's my frame of reference. Because I don't know.
That's like saying JB's. I mean, here's what used to be here.
It's shorthand for me, but I think that probably may make it next. But it's almost for certain a hotel.
We got one down here in Bannock, which could be opening up pretty soon, too.
That might be, after saying that.
Yeah.
That might beat it, but it's going to be one of those. We're just, like I said, we couldn't be happier. Some good downtown residential projects, too. I think we set a goal of making, you know, having 1,000 units built by 2020, and I think we're going to be there in another year or so. And that again, is just, it adds to, you know, everything. We've got all the infrastructure. We don't pay any more. You know, police or fire or, you know, water pipes, sewer pipes, all of it's there. And it adds to the vibrancy of downtown and you know, helps businesses, helps employers. It's a really good thing to see.
And yeah, if you want a what-the-heck moment, turn from Jefferson onto 10th Street.
Yeah.
You go, where am I? What are these buildings at the end of the street? What are these buildings on this side? Where am I?
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's just we're growing up, and we think it's great. You know, the my wife jabs me a little bit saying, God, we're losing some vistas, and that's mm-hmm. true. But on the whole, it's a great thing to see, and we're hoping to see more of it.
Mayor Beter, we're at the end of our time. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. See you next month.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time 9:37. KBOI rewards code is not pumpkins, it's Falcons. FALCONS, as in Air Force Falcons, mm-hmm. whom Boise State plays. Tomorrow afternoon. No. It's actually an afternoon game. Starting at 4:00.
I hope these Falcons do just as well as the last time I watched a Falcons play.
Did you watch them get beat?
I did. That was the Super Bowl.
Oh, those Falcons.
Those Falcons, yes.
Yeah. Well, I hope we don't get behind by 25 first. That's not good.
But even if we do, I mean, if it comes out well, then, you know, more power.
I guess that's right. Yeah.
Probably have to go into overtime.
That's good.
It's a different sport completely, of course.
Yeah. All right. It is an Open Phones Friday. I don't have the names of these guys. Give me names on one and two.
Line one is Mike. Line two is William.
All right. Let's go to line one and Mike. Mike, good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm good. You guys got a great show.
Thank you. And,
anyway, what I was calling about was about those Indians up there on that pipeline or sniveling about that.
Yeah.
And a real good friend of mine, he's a full-blooded Indian. And he says those Indians up there are a disgrace to his race. And I says, well, why? He says, the new generation, they don't care about that sacred ground. All they care about is that sacred welfare grants they get all the time. And he says a lot of them don't work. And a lot of those protesters, they're not even from that country. They just come in here to get on the bandwagon. And he says, what's going to be a mess in the spring? Well, they left a lot of those trailers and motorhomes in there. Well, they got so cold and they froze up and broke because they ran out of gas and propane. He says the city or the state's got to go in there afterwards and clean that mess up, the species, beer cans, and trash they left. And of course, a lot of them are still there, I guess.
Well, not so many, actually.
What's that?
Not so many, actually. There's not very many left.
No, they had to bail out of there because it was so...
Nasty.
Yeah, and it was so cold, and they got snowed in. They ran out of gas and propane, so they just left them. And he said they're just a disgrace and everything. And we need them. He says they need the pipelines, more of them, so we can start selling oil to other countries and get out of debt. We've been buying oil for tons of years from everybody else, and that's why we're broke. But maybe things will go better. And another quick note. I was down in Nevada going down to visit, and I heard on a radio station telling about those movie actors.
Mm-hmm.
He says they should stick to their forget politics because they know nothing about it. Stick what they know best, drugs, alcohol, and sex. That's what they know best. Anyway. But anyway, I thought I'd pass that on, and you guys got an excellent show. And I remember when you had the radio station. That was really good.
Yep.
And you guys have a really good one.
All right, thanks. A nice call. Okay. One more here. Let's go to William. William, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How you fellas doing today?
Good.
I'm calling because I'm kind of confused about this ninth district ruling. Now, determining the security of the nation is the president's executive authority. That's correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the only thing the judicial district should be doing is determining whether the steps he's taken are constitutional. It is not up to them to determine whether or not there's a security risk there or what level of that risk is that, because that's not their authority. Their authority is determining whether or not he is actually doing a constitutional move. And I can't understand for the life of me how they made that ruling without ruling on the constitutionality of his executive order.
Yeah, this whole thing has got me a little confused, and Lord knows I'm not a lawyer, and I've read the court order, but see, you can read court orders all day if you don't know what laws apply to it, you're not going to be able to figure it out. Apparently, according to Trump's people, they missed a key statute in there. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens.
Well, from the summary of the ruling is they determined that Trump's lawyers did not show proof of a security risk from certain nations. And it's not for them to determine what the risk is. That's because Trump has information they don't, and he can't be giving that information to them to justify his actions. They just need to let him know whether or not his actions are constitutional.
Well, the ruling basically means that for right now, the people from those seven previously named nations can continue entering the country until the case is resolved for good, because this wasn't the last of it.
No,
you know, and even
first of it.
Yeah. Travelers are not going to be detained at the airport. They're not going to be put back on planes, heading back to their countries. And there probably won't be any protests, at the airports in the next couple of weeks. But the executive order is not yet, it's not dead. It just isn't being enforced while the courts debate its legality. Now, the feds have 2 weeks to ask the Ninth Circuit to reconsider yesterday's decision. My guess is they won't. But they could also file an emergency appeal with the Supreme Court, which then would go to Justice Anthony Kennedy for referral to the rest of the court. So there's a lot that could happen in the next few weeks.
Yeah, but in the meantime, there's still people that are in the pipeline that are working their way here. The ones that are the thing is, they still haven't been able to determine whether or not they are thoroughly vetted in those areas where there are war zones. And I can't see how they're vetting people in a war zone.
Yeah.
You don't go around knocking on a door when you got bombs and people shooting out of windows and carrying around and asking, well, what is this person like?
One thing I think I would tell the president is that, you know, the judges are actually a different part of the government than you control, and it's probably not wise to insult any of the judges because they all feel like they were insulted once one of them gets insulted, and they're not above using that as a reason to rule against whatever Trump wants.
Yeah.
My suggestion is that Donald is that every judge that you come into his court has an ego the size of yours.
All right, thanks, William. Okay, now the judges referred to the government's position. Mm-hmm. This is what confuses me.
Yeah.
That such presidential decisions on immigration policy are unreviewable. So the president said basically our policy is unreviewable, and the judges said there's no precedent to support this claimed unreviewability,
mm-hmm.
which runs contrary to the fundamental structure of our constitutional democracy.
Well, anything being unreviewable, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if it's unreviewable, why do we have courts if you can't review it? It's amazing.
There basically were two items before the court. The first one was the government's appeal of the lower court's ruling, and also there was a motion to put that ruling on hold pending the appeal. And on Thursday, the panel from the Ninth District denied the motion for stay and set a briefing schedule for more arguments on the merits of the appeal coming up like March 3rd, I think, is the first one.
Mm-hmm. All right, we need to take a break. KBOI News Time, 9:46. Cool Jazz, 95.86.
Alan Parsons Project.
It is.
Yeah.
He had some really interesting beginnings to songs.
Like, for instance, this one. And the one that the Phoenix Suns and Chicago Bulls used to use.
Yeah.
I like that, too.
What was that song?
Ding, 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 ding. I can't remember the name.
Sounded nothing like the hit, which it was. All right. Anyway, let's go to Steve of Boise on our open phones Friday. Steve, good morning.
How you doing, Paul Gray?
I'm good.
Oh, man. Hey, you guys have to be kidding me, man. I mean, you have to read this proclamation. It's straight out of the Constitution. A code for code and number for number. The president doesn't need judges. All he needs is the Congress and the president. He can make this decision at any time. It's word for word. And in 29 pages by an activist court, which 80% of their cases never even make it past the Supreme Court, that's the history of them, there's not one mention of the constitutional proclamation that he has every right. Google it up and read it, what they read. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, the only reason Obama never got any resistance when he pulled all these executive orders is the Republicans have been so spineless for so long, nobody ever objected.
If you've watched any of the, like last night, for instance, some of the news channels were just going to their usual cast of lawyers that they have, that they interview about certain things. And a lot of them on both sides of the political spectrum were saying that they actually didn't agree with this ruling at all.
Well, they didn't agree. See, these are all, hey, come on, look at the history of this panel. They're all activists that have been selected as judges. This is legal, totally legal. Read it. It's word for word. Yeah. All you got to do is look it up. But at the same time, and just like that gal that got, remember, she just got deported there in Arizona and they had the big ruckus?
Yep.
Okay, did you get the whole story? No, the Main Street media did not give you the whole story, and they never do, of why she even got caught She got arrested for identity theft.
Yeah, I saw that on NBC, so you can't say they didn't have that.
No, I'm just saying, when they first gave the report, Paul J., they never give the second part.
Well, they had to. I mean, it had to be a felony, so everybody's going, well, what was the felony? She made up a Social Security number so she could get a job, which is a felony.
Well, exactly. But what I'm saying is the media comes across like they're hunting down people for no reason. I'm separating them from their family. The same old fake news, you know. And, you know, they're about to come to the end of the road here.
You know, let's go the rest of the year without saying fake news.
Well, exactly.
Because anytime somebody doesn't agree with something, it's fake news.
I never even heard of it until now. It's just crazy. Because now, you know, you hear it every day. And then you start investigating, and then you find out that a lot of it's true. Just like taking the Martin Luther King thing out of the president's office. That was all a lie, but they let it go on for a few days and then they come out and apologize. Well, by then the damage is done. See, it's all propaganda.
You almost said fake news.
No, I didn't. I held back, Paul J. I held back just for you on Friday, buddy.
All right, Steve.
You guys have a good day.
Thanks, bye. He almost did it. All right, John, you got a minute. 1 minute.
Well, part and parcel of this problem is what he said, spineless Republicans. And we know that the left is going to push as far as possible. We haven't been able to trust the press at all. And the whole rigmarole as far as education, that's the key. If we understood our own U.S. history, even for the last 100 years, a basic sixth grader could tell you that he's called the commander-in-chief for a reason. He's responsible for our safety. The judges have no authority to even stop or even hear the case to begin with. Now, this whole thing does not go towards any U.S. citizen. The justice system is put in place primarily for the U.S. citizens only.
All right, we are out of time. Well, there's got to be checks and balances. That's all I'm going to say there. KBOI News Time, 9:55. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning. Start this all over again. News Talk 670 KBOI. Have a great weekend.